Innocent until proven guilty, it's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The Medicare podcast that is 100% made in America. He's making America great again. Medicare expert, Doug Jones.
Well, hello, 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 everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. This is Doug Jones, your Medicare expert, as my Canadian nephew, Drew McMillan, may have told you. And I'm here to help you feel confident and happy about your encounter with Medicare, whenever that may be. It may be soon, or you may be a youngster, or you may be continuing to work at your job covered by employer health insurance, and you may just be looking ahead into the future. Like, I'm going to do a little research on Medicare so that I'm prepared, so that I know what to do when the time comes for me to walk away from my company and walk away from my company-provided health insurance. One of the ways that you can learn all of that in a very palatable way is to purchase my book, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2024, simplest and easiest guide ever. If you go to Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com, you're going to find that Medicare for the Lazy Man 2024 is on sale, or close to being on sale in the case of Barnes & Noble. For some reason, there's a little hiccup in their new book listing process. But let's talk about Amazon. Right now, there are three versions of Medicare for the Lazy Man 2024 on Amazon. There's a paperback version, which seems to be the most popular. There is a Kindle version, which if you want Medicare knowledge right now, that's the way to go. It's $4.80, and you can have immediate gratification. You can have that thing downloaded to your reader in no time flat. And there is a magnificently designed hardcover version that we'll talk about in greater detail in another time. So right now, there are three versions. I have to record the fourth version, which is the Audible book. Some people like to listen to Audible books, and I'm going to make it available for them to do that. And that gives you all the ways that you can ingest the knowledge available in Medicare for the Lazy Man 2024. Speaking of lazy men, I see that Randy Carson has joined us. He's slept in this morning. I think he's up and around now. I know he's got some coffee, and it's always a pleasure to say hello to Randy Carson. Hello, Randy Carson.
Well, hey, Mr. Jones. You're looking bright-eyed and bushy-tailed today. I particularly like your T-shirt.
Can you read it?
I can. I'm really disappointed. When I first moved to Arizona, I thought that particular place, Greasewood Flat, was the coolest thing I had ever seen in my life, and now it's gone.
Well, unfortunately, good things can't last forever. And I think what happened was, now, Greasewood Flat, for those who don't know, the non-Arizonans in the audience, was a fantastic bar that was, how would you describe it? It was very rustic.
Oh, yeah.
And it was... what you do is you drive.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say you drive down a dirt road, a dusty dirt road, and around a pasture that not a pasture, a corral that had mules and stuff in it, and
right.
It would be braying at you, and you'd park in the area close to the entrance, and the area of the bar was blocked off by mining equipment and covered wagons, Conestoga wagons, and all kinds of stuff like that. All the stuff that we as kids saw in Western movies, this is where they put it all.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought the other thing interesting, I it's just one of those things that made it very memorable. First time I went to Greasewood, I thought, well, you know, I did the typical, you know, Midwestern thing. I got up there and they go, what do you want? Well, I want a cheeseburger.
And fries.
I want some fries. And they go, don't have any fries. Now then they'd point up at the sign right above their heads. We don't have fries.
Yeah.
What can I get? Chips. That's what the sign says, buddy. That's chips. Yep. You get chips. You get nothing else.
They just rip a bag of chips off of the rack behind them and throw it at you.
Yeah. I don't even think you got to pick the flavor of chip.
No.
Just got they, just, what whatever they had that day. But I'll never forget that. Oh, and the other thing that was a surprise to you, if you walked in there and, you know, ordered a whole buttload of hamburgers for your friends, cash only, buddy.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And the other thing was that they had a whole room. This was in a bunkhouse, an old ranch bunkhouse from 100 years ago. And they had a room just for the condiments. So you'd go from the room where you ordered stuff to the room where they handed you the stuff through the window. And then you'd go to the condiment dispensary and then out a different door. And everything was outside. All the picnic tables had just sat out in the weather for years and years. And it was surrounded by buildings. Some of the buildings were for entertainment. Some of them were for bathrooms. And quite a place. But it was started by a guy back in the 1970s. And I think his trophy wife survived him. He died at some point. So the trophy wife and the kids wound up as business partners owning this place. And I think they decided that they didn't get along that well together. That's my thought anyway.
Yeah. Well, the other thing now you would only find this in Arizona, but Doug is not going to, he's not going to shake his head in disbelief. He's going to say, oh yeah, yeah, I know all about that. You'd go to Greasewood and as Doug just said, everything was outside. And at night when it started getting dark and it started getting a little cool, they had 55 gallon barrels cut in half on legs.
Right.
And then there was a big pile of firewood out to the side, and you'd grab your firewood and you'd bring it in and you'd start your own fire in your own 55 gallon half cut barrel. And then you could go to the part. So I don't know, it wasn't the place where the hamburgers was. It was a different place. You could go to get marshmallows to roast.
And they'd
hand you a hanger that you could unwind to make a marshmallow cooker.
A rusty hanger.
Yeah. And so then you'd have about 150 people running around with red hot hangers with marshmallows fixing fires. I mean, it was just mayhem.
Yeah, and they always had little kids running around.
Yeah. Because
people brought their kids. It was a family type place. It wasn't like, they had live music and all that, but it was, the kids would run around with the marshmallows, stabbing each other with a red hot hanger.
Yeah. I mean, bottom line, I'm surprised, in today's world, well, okay, Arizona is a different world, guys. And I recognize that, but nobody ever got killed. Nobody ever got, put an eye out. No, that's not going to happen.
Right. It was,
we'll do anything out here.
Absolutely. And it was, freedom at its best.
Yes. Yes, it really was. And I was so, so disappointed and sad when I heard that Greasewood was going away.
So years later, I went down to Santan Flat, which is all the way across Phoenix. It's 100 miles south. And Santan Flat is a lot more civilized. Nothing happens. Some things happen outside, but they're fireplaces instead of the rusty 55-gallon drums that are cut in half. And they have a dining room, an indoor dining room, for those who find the outside just a little too challenging. And Santan Flat is nice, but it's not it doesn't have the personality that Greasewood Flat had.
Oh, I'm telling you, you probably did the same thing. Every Midwesterner that I got out here, which wasn't a lot because you'd think I was asking them to come to Europe. But anyway, I would take them to Greasewood, and they just had the biggest time of their lives.
Absolutely. People talked about it. They wanted to come back. If they came back again, they'd say, let's go to that place again. What's the name of that place? And you'd tell them, and they'd say, oh, all right, I don't remember the name. Well, it didn't have a sign or anything.
No, you just had to know it was there.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was a wonderful, wonderful place to hang out.
It's kind of like that bar up in Cave Creek. Every time you look for an address on it, it just says somewhere in Cave Creek.
which bar is that?
Oh, my God. Which one? It's the one that holds the biker, thing.
Yeah, the Hideaway.
The Hideaway, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they hold the biker thing in the spring, and when you go in there and looking for an address, it just goes somewhere in Cave Creek. If you don't know where it is, we don't care.
I think they're trying to keep a low profile because their logo for their bar is the Harley Davidson logo.
Yeah, yeah.
And there may be some copyright infringement they're concerned about or something, but and then of course we have Outlaw Annie's, which is abandoned, and it's got a fence around it like they're planning to do something, but I don't know if anything's ever going to happen.
We got a lot of places up here I just love to death, but we got to hold on to history here, people.
Absolutely. It's turning into, all these people from California are trampling across the border to join us in a land that's more sane and easier to live in than California is.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah. I was able to get solar.
Yeah, well, that's congratulations. What he's referring to is I mentioned that Bill Maher became very frustrated with his attempt to get solar in California, followed all the rules and regulations, and they're still frustrating him by adding more rules and regulations. And Randy likes to watch YouTube videos about various subjects, so I suggested that he might Google Bill Maher plus solar and see if Bill Maher has his list of complaints readily available for the viewing public.
I've said my piece, so I think we need to make a few bucks here, Doug.
Well, I'm going to start that with a lengthy article that I found a couple of weeks ago. Oh, no, I'm going to start first with an apology, because I, in episode 612, which was probably eight episodes ago, I talked at great length about a man who is under age 65, but he has some sort of medical disability. And I offered him the companies from my portfolio, and the lowest price I could come up with, a monthly premium for a Medicare supplement plan that would supplement his prior to age 65 Medicare, was going to cost him like $120 a month. I couldn't offer him the high deductible plans, which are much, much, much cheaper than that. And so he said, well, by doing some research, I found that State Farm agencies have Medicare supplement. The one plan that I'm allowed to get in Virginia as a prior to age 65, an under age 65 disabled person, is going to cost me $80 a month, I think it was. And so I said, well, you better call State Farm and take advantage of that, because I don't have anything as attractively priced. And so he then sent me a copy of correspondence, highly insulting response that he got. And I thought it was from a State Farm agent. It said, if you don't want to talk to us on the telephone, and if you only want to correspond, we're not going to have any of that. Go to hell, and you're not our client. So why should we be polite to you? And it was pretty insulting. And he sent me an email this morning saying that it was not from State Farm. It was somebody he found on YouTube, from a well-known agency on YouTube. He has no complaints about State Farm, so my apologies go out for misunderstanding his original report to me. State Farm was not, whoever he would have contacted at State Farm, was not the person responsible for the rude response. I'd sure like to know. I hope he tells me which YouTube well-known agency it is, because if it's who I think it might be, I'm not surprised, and I wouldn't mind bad-mouthing them all day long to warn people off from these ne'er-do-wells in Texas, where I think that's, if I'm correct, it's an agency that's located in Fort Worth, Texas. But I'll wait until I hear further details before I say any more about it. Okay. Long-term care insurance. I remember very early in the history of this podcast, back in 2020, I spent one episode talking about long-term care insurance, which I think, if it worked properly, would be a fantastic boon for the many people who have a spouse or who themselves are concerned about needing long-term care in a nursing home or custodial care that Medicare won't pay for. And the problem is that long-term care insurance is getting to be hugely expensive and almost prices itself out of the marketplace. It's not like life insurance. When you purchase this long-term care insurance, they have the right to raise the rates on you as time goes by. And life insurance, you purchase $100,000 of life insurance for a certain amount of money. Typically, that rate stays the same. Or if it's going to go up in the future, you know exactly how much it's going to go up by. long-term care insurance is kind of open-ended. And the assumption originally was that the premium would be level for life, but that hasn't proven to be the case. Inflation has affected long-term care insurance. And so I ran across an article that I thought I'd share with you. It says, why long-term care insurance falls short for so many people. And it starts out talking about a woman named Angela. For 35 years, she and her five brothers paid premiums on a long-term care insurance policy for their 91-year-old mother. This is 35 years, so she was in her mid-50s, I guess, when somebody bought the long-term care insurance. But she and her five brothers paid the premium for 35 years. The policy does not cover home health aides whose assistance allows her to stay in her Sacramento, California bungalow near the friends and neighbors that she loves. Her family pays $4,000 a month in addition just for the home health care aides. Now, you could certainly get home health care coverage in a long-term care insurance policy, but that wasn't introduced in the original long-term care insurance policy. So it's probable that whoever purchased this insurance, long-term care insurance for the 91-year-old woman, didn't have that option. Or maybe they wanted to save a couple of bucks. So the article goes on to say, the private insurance market has proved wildly inadequate in providing financial security for most of the millions of older Americans who might need home health aides, assisted living, or other types of assistance with daily living. For decades, the industry severely underestimated how many policyholders would use their coverage, how long they would live, and how much care their care would cost. And as this woman belatedly discovered, the older generation of plans, those from the 1980s, often covered only nursing homes. 3 to 4% of Americans age 50 and older pay for a long-term health care policy, according to an insurance study. That stands in stark contrast to federal estimates that 70% of people age 65 and older will need critical services before they die. Repeated government efforts to create a functioning market for long-term care insurance or to provide public alternatives have never taken hold. Today, most insurers have stopped selling standalone long-term care policies. The ones that still exist are too expensive for most people, and they've become less affordable each year with insurers raising premiums higher and higher. Many policyholders face painful choices to pay more, trim down their benefits, or drop coverage altogether. It's a giant bait and switch, says one woman of Sandy, Utah, whose annual premium with her husband climbed to more than $5,700 in 2019. That's a $2,000 increase per year over what they started out paying. The glaring gaps in access to coverage persist despite steady increases in overall payouts. Last year, insurers paid more than $313 billion to cover 345,000 long-term care claims. Many policyholders and their relatives reported that their plans helped them avert financial catastrophes when they faced long-term care costs that would have otherwise eviscerated their savings. But others have started to learn that policies they paid into over for decades will not fully cover the escalating present-day costs of home health aides, assisted living facilities, or nursing homes. An industry trade group said long-term care was the most challenging type of insurance to manage. You need multiple crystal balls, and you have to look 20 years into the future, and you have to be correct. More insurers now offer hybrid plans that combine life insurance with long-term care. These policies are less generous than the ones offered a decade ago, and using long-term care benefits drains some or all of the money that policyholders had hoped to leave to their heirs. Many experts believe that it's untenable to expect that a private insurance market can protect most people from the growing burden of long-term care costs. The increases continue. A rating agency, an insurance rating agency, said in a report last November that Genworth, one of the companies that still sells long-term care insurance, they will continue to need annual rate increases for at least several more years to reach economic break-even. Prices for new policies have jumped. A decade ago, a couple aged 55 could expect to pay about $3,700 a year for a policy that included $162,000 in total benefits and a 3% annual inflation protection. Today, that policy, virtually the same benefit, would cost $5,000. That's 35% more, even as rising health costs and inflation have eroded the value of the benefits. And that's only for people who can qualify. To limit their losses, insurers have narrowed the eligibility pool of clients. In 2021, about 30% of applicants aged 60 to 64 were denied a long-term care policy because of medical underwriting. For applicants 70 to 74, the rejection rate was 47%. Even among people in their 50s, more than 20% were turned down. Chronic conditions, a history of stroke or diabetes, or psychiatric illness may all be grounds for disqualification.
So
coverage is available in a facility. Okay, so we're back to Angela and her 91-year-old mother. The policy went unused because, like many older policies, it covered only skilled nursing care in a facility. Her children had purchased the policy after the woman's husband died at age 56. But decades later, once the lady developed dementia in her 80s, her children realized how desperately their mother wanted to stay home. They tried to add a rider to the policy to cover home health care, but were told that her mother's age, she was older than 75, barred add-ons. Now the siblings jointly pay about $4,000 a month for two home health aides while still paying the insurance premium of more than $2,500 a year. We feel like if we stop paying it, another unforeseen need will arise and cause us to wish we had kept it. So that is an article that apparently was printed in the New York Times at some point. Now, this morning, I found that article a week or two ago and put it on the list of content for the content curator to go through. This morning, I found an article referring to that particular article. This article was published 3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago, and it says Debunking Long-Term Care Insurance Myths. So we heard several explanations in that prior article about why long-term care insurance is such a problem for the insurance companies and such an increasingly expensive burden for the policyholders, the payers of premium. And now we've got an article here that describes the myths, and there are five myths that need to be blown up, that were referred to in that particular article. So let's look at myth number one. The myth is that long-term care insurance rate hikes were driven by insurers underestimating how much care insureds would need or how long they would live and how much care would cost. Now, here's the truth. According to an actuary, this assertion doesn't consider several factors. Back in the late 80s and early 1990s, interest rates were very high. As you know, this is a long-duration product that's very sensitive to interest rates and interest rate assumptions. It was not uncommon to assume that long-term interest rates would be 7 or 8% back when a lot of these products were originally priced. When the interest rates dropped like they did, that was a big contributor to the need for premium rate increases. What they're saying here is that when somebody purchased a policy, the insurance company assumed that they would be able to invest the premium dollars at a higher rate of return than they actually were able to, because we went through a long period of very, very low, uncharacteristically low interest rates. And that caused the insurance companies to have less revenue to pay the claims with, because when they invested that money, they didn't get the rate of return that they anticipated originally when they priced the insurance policy. So this response goes on. As far as life expectancy goes, certainly people are living longer now than when we priced the products back in the 1990s. But in addition to that, we had assumed insureds would lapse their coverage at a higher rate than what we're seeing. We thought the lapse rates would be in the mid single digits, like 5%, but they turned out to be 1% per year and even less in a lot of instances. So the frequency of usage wasn't as big of a miss as you might think based on the article. The other two factors, interest rates and lapse rates, were more at play. And so they have statements from several other mathematicians. But let's see what myth number two says. Myth number two is insurers experienced a brief profitable surge during the COVID pandemic. I didn't remember reading that in the article, but the content curator drew my attention to various sections and not to the reading of the whole thing. So the truth behind this myth is that this is not fully accurate. Unfortunately, COVID-19 resulted in high mortality rates in older populations. This higher mortality, coupled with fewer individuals going on claim because people didn't want to put their loved ones in nursing homes, had a positive financial effect for long-term care insurers, given the way this insurance works. However, claim experience has mostly reverted to pre-panic levels. This article states that insurers saw $1.1 billion in profits in 2020 and 2021 combined, but fails to point out that when aggregated with the 2019 and 2022 earnings that are also referenced in the article, the industry still lost $1.5 billion. Myth number three, long-term care insurance is one of the riskiest insurance in our types of insurance in our universe. The truth is that long-term care insurance is risky, but that may be calling it the risky in the universe is hyperbolic and perhaps based on the industry's challenging past. It isn't a secret that the industry has faced a lot of challenges, including a perfect storm of assumption deterioration, competition that reduced inherent conservatism, and care in setting changes. There are multiple actuarial risks that are inherent to this product, including morbidity, interest, and persistency. These risks are complex and interrelated. Morbidity is the rate of or the percentage of people that are going to be claiming their benefits. Interest is the earnings that the insurance company can earn on the premium dollars until they need to spend them to pay a claim. And persistency refers to how many policies that are sold remain in premium paying status as opposed to being lapsed. So anyway, this coupled with the long-term horizon between when the policies were issued and when benefits are paid exposes carriers to a lot of downside risk. When you're pricing these products, you're making assumptions about what will happen in 20, 30, or 40 years in the future. This long time horizon creates uncertainty, and uncertainty creates risk. But if we've learned a lot of lessons from the historical challenges, and the product designs have evolved to a more risk-savvy with assumptions that reflect our past experience. Myth number four, insurers have tightened their belts and they're denying more and more claims. This is not fully accurate, according to the sources. There are just more claims. People who bought these policies 30 years ago are at an age where they're submitting claims, so you have a higher volume of claims. Yes, insurers are going to deny some claims because the policy may not cover the insured situation, but that does not stop people from filing. Certainly, if you don't meet the criteria to trigger a benefit, the coverage likely won't approve your claim. If insurance companies just paid erroneous claims, that would cause more of the type of problems we're trying to avoid. One of the primary trigger for a long-term care policy is the activities of daily living. So if there are five activities of daily living, maybe six, and the policy states that the claim will be valid if the insured person is unable to perform some of those activities of daily living, that becomes a fairly clear definition of when a claim is valid. So if a person is unable to bathe themselves or to eat or whatever, that could be violating two of the activities of daily living, and it may be enough to tell the insurance company, okay, this is a legitimate claim for care for a person. So myth number five, financial problems have forced high-profile carriers to drastically revise their policy terms and their premiums or go into insolvency. This apparently is a myth, and somebody named Heitkamp calls this a scare tactic. This really can't happen in most situations. The insurance company can increase premium rates with regulatory approval and can reduce benefits, but only at the policyholder's option. And this is usually done as an offset to a premium rate increase. The only time a policyholder's benefits could arbitrarily be reduced is if the long-term care insurance company went into rehabilitation or liquidation. Another actuary added that rate increases, while painful, are a sign of the importance of long-term care insurance. People continue to pay the premium for this product because they expect either that they might need to use it or they want peace of mind. They want the risk removed from their life if they do need it. It's a valuable product and a real source of financial well-being. So two sides of the coin. The article that I read from the New York Times indicated that there was big trouble on the long-term care insurance front. And the article I read more recently about the myths, the five myths, I didn't tie the two together as well as I should have. So if you want to go read the original article, it's much longer than the time I gave it today. And then the myths numbered 1 through 5 apparently attack specific sections of that article. So there's a difference of opinion out there, and that's always the case. And speaking of difference of opinion, my opinion is that we ought to DD on out of here, Randy. What do you think?
We have just spent, and I'm sorry to say, we're still stuck on a 75-cent budget.
Oh, boy.
But, you know, things are tough all over, people, I'm telling you.
It's
so we just spent our 75 cents. But before I let you guys go, there's a couple things I always want to do to kind of wrap up. Number one, you can reach out to Doug at dbj@mlmmailbag.com. He's there every day, 24/7, waiting for your email. And he gets, you know, if he doesn't get anything, he's disappointed. And that leads to being a grumpy Doug. So that's not good. That's not good. So anyway, also, do not forget, Doug is licensed nationwide to help you with your Medicare supplement planning. Check us out at the website, MedicareForTheLazyMan.com. We would appreciate it if you could find a place to drop a couple reviews on the content that we produce, the books, the website, you know, the podcast, you name it. We would enjoy a couple thumbs up someplace. Last but certainly not least, thank you for joining us. You could have been 100 different places doing 99 different things, but you weren't. We had you right with us, listening to the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast, right where we wanted you. But you probably didn't notice on your watch that you have just spent 32 and a half minutes with Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma originally. Now, he has come up and he's coming, I think, at about 12,000 feet in the high country behind Cave Creek, Arizona.
Well, it's 1,000 less than last time.
Yeah, I think I'm bringing you down because, you know, I don't want you to pass out during the podcast. It's just not going to be a good thing.
What a swell fella you are. Thank you so much. And thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for joining us today. We're going to be very hopeful that we'll see you in our next episode. Bye-bye.